feels all kind of very rock show, you know, when that's going on. You're coming out. Like, all right. Anyway. Well, good morning. Great having you here with us today. As we do every week, Arush is going to come forward and give us an opportunity to partner together financially with what God's doing locally and globally in and through our community. And so if you want to worship God in that way and you came prepared to give and to partner with our community in that way, the next few moments would be the time to do that. So as we do that, I want to take a few moments here at the beginning and share with you a letter from the Haitian Children's Home from Danny Pye, who's the dad and missionary there that we partner with. And so most of you that have journeyed with us here in the last month or so have kind of been aware of our partnership and kind of some of the unique and pretty incredible things that God's been doing through us and the sacrifice and the giving that's happened in this community. So I'll show you a picture real quick of some land pictures that I took when I was down there a couple weeks ago. And I kind of threw them for a curveball, but I didn't take those pictures a few weeks ago, just in case you're wondering. but yeah, just here's a picture of land here. This is where one of the homes is being built. And then this on the 17 acres of land that we were able to purchase, some of the kids there and overlooking the ocean view. And we talk a lot about the ocean view, which is amazing, but that's not a bad front yard view either, you know? And so when you flip around and you look out toward the mountains, and so just so excited. And so with that, Danny Pye wrote us a letter. And so I want to share that with you this morning. He says, I want to begin, cross point, this letter to apologize that it's taken me so long to muster the courage to write this to you. It's a bittersweet mix of emotions right now in our home as we continue to mourn the sudden loss of our son, yet rejoice in the victory after a two-year push of God providing the 17-plus acres of land. As I reflect over the past two of our 4 years in our ministry, I'm constantly blown away in all of God's faithfulness in providing our needs and growing our ministry. You, CrossPoint, have made a huge impact in the Haitian Children's Home family, in Jacmel, and in Haiti. This is what your support has allowed this once small organization here to do. First, I want to share the impact in the community and the surrounding areas. Your support allowed us to begin a hospital fund that has provided life-saving medical care for 36 people, rescuing an orphanage in Gonaive with 38 children in it, providing all of them with life-saving medical care, clean water, dry mattresses, food, and clothing after a flood destroyed their home and claimed thousands of lives in their area. You have provided funding for our scholarship program, which paid tuition for 35 high school students who had to drop out of school because they couldn't afford it, students that would have never had the chance to continue their education, students that were just years away from graduating. CrossPoint, you have provided Christmas gifts and a party for a community that is so poor that they had never before celebrated Christmas with a hot meal, with meat, or even gifts. You provided food for hundreds of families in Jacmel and Bassemblé and Raymond that were the victims from the floods that Tropical Storm Noel brought in. Now, as far as our family, you, CrossPoint, were a part of helping us take an orphanage and transforming it into a home. You assisted us with the purchase of a bus for the first time, being able to transport our 22 children inside a vehicle with their own seats, where before we squished into an SUV with a roof rack with nine of our children sitting on the roof. You helped us repair the generator after being out of power for weeks. You helped us in our truck repairs. You helped move us from a house where we were evicted from a busy street in downtown to paying a two-year lease in our present home in the quiet suburbs. This home having more room than before, enabling us to receive three more children, saving three more lives. You've helped us ship in a vehicle and purchase our first washing machine and ship that in as well. You have made it easy to communicate by gifting us a laptop and brought joy in our home by gifting us iPods and a loud stereo system. That's the way we roll, you know. That now marks our home. Anyone that visits our home knows our children love to sing and dance to loud music. Your community, CrossPoint, is responsible for blessing us with all the birthday presents for our kids this year, and you have continued to shower blessings on them in forms of clothing, toys, shoes, and have celebrated with them, whether it was taking our whole family out to eat for the first time or jumping in a pool for the first time. You have come and served. You have loved on our children with genuine love and allowed them to love you back. You have sent teams to help build our church in Bassemblé, and you have helped reach the unreached children by hosting a VBS for them. Now till today, successfully as a community, at this point, CrossPoint, you have given $421,000 in 1 week that enabled us to purchase this land for our future home. over 17 acres right on the ocean. The future home of 160 children who have been abandoned, discarded, and orphaned. Provided a school for them, will provide a school for them to attend, as well as additional 650 children from the community, as there is virtually no school in this area. You have provided a chance for thousands to attend school for the first time, a school that is not only offering a quality education, but also doing it free of charge, unheard of in Haiti, as the government schools are too expensive to attend. Offering them food and clean water every day, for most the only meal they will eat that day. Offering them an opportunity to know and have a relationship with Jesus, though that is not conditional on our love. This land will also have room for a clinic to offer affordable medical care to this community, also foreign to this region. We will also have a church, a community center, a playground, and a soccer field. You, Crosspoint, will never know the full impact that your sacrificial giving has had on our ministry, on our family, on our community, and on Haiti. A few stories just to bring it all in perspective. We have had three families come by this month alone asking us to receive a child. One was an orphan. Others had a living mother and father but abandoned the family in hopes to find means to survive themselves. I could not offer them a home, but I could offer them hope. I promised them soon, if they can just hang on, that we would help. Soon we would have a home for them. I take our family several times a week to the land to walk, to pray, to dream, and to play. We have children coming on from surrounding homes sharing that they are hungry and that they want to go to school. I can't meet the need immediately, but I give them hope. I promise them that soon there will be a school right there where they can attend, and I will personally save room for them. I promise a feeding program that they can come and receive nourishment and clean water. Their parents come around and share how hard life is as they search for work. I share our vision with them. I share that in time there will be jobs supporting hundreds of families in the area. I share hope. Today in church, I made the official announcement to our community, a community that has been praying for this vision in Haiti for years, that this dream is a reality. Crosspoint, I wish you were there with me today as I watched a church of 700 people jump from their seats in excitement and rejoicing the miracle that God has done through you. I wish you were there when I shared with our family that the land we have been praying for is now ours. Watching some cry, watching some jump up and down, watching some scream, and watching others gaze in disbelief. We've had many in our ministry come and make beautiful promises, and at the end of the day, it didn't happen. Our children have been let down and hurt in ways most of us could never comprehend, yet to watch the hope and joy that they now live with day to day is a miracle in itself. Thank you for being part of that miracle. In a short 10 months, we'll be joined by a second family, a family well-known and loved by your community there at Crosspoint, the Mangines. They will learn the language, they will get accustomed to living in Haiti, and they begin all over again redemption as they open their house to our next 20 children. Then we will take a journey, 20 minutes by car, then another 45-minute walk up a steep path until we find a girl named Madeline. She's a slave child in a home. She is the older sister of Vanya, a girl who we rescued from being sacrificed by voodoo priests with your help only 9 months ago. Nick will pick her up in his arms and tell her that she will never be abused again. Promise her that she will never have to work that hard or be treated like that again. Nick will reassure her and tell her. Thank you again for your sacrificial giving. You have made all the difference, Crosspoint. Crosspoint, you have been a part of salvation and rescuing lives. You have met needs you didn't know existed. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you. And him, Danny Pye. So, yeah. I'm so, so proud of our church. And I hope that you're proud to be a part of this community and what God is allowing us to be a part of and join together. And, revolution is happening, and this dream of making a radical impact in a couple focused parts of the world, not just doing a little in a lot of places, but doing a lot in a few, it's happening, and it's happening in a huge way. And so, so thank you for that, and thank you for being a part of that. Well, there's no real easy way to transition out of that, but... I'll give it my best shot, and as you do too, we've still got people kind of standing in the back waiting to get in, and so if you guys can make some room and squeeze in, I know we've got five or six seats up here in the middle and on the sides, but it helps people find seats easier if they can get to the ends. And I know that's not the fun thing to have to scoot in because you're like, what if I have to go to the bathroom, you know? Well, we love people more than that, so okay. So, sorry about your luck. All right. Now on to mercy, okay. Sorry, it's on suffering, it kind of fits. Last week, we kicked off this new series of teachings called Pandemic. And on suffering, if you weren't here, really encourage you to go back and listen to it online because it sets the foundation for the other things that we're going to be getting into this week and in the next couple weeks. And one of the things that we landed on last week was this need that as the scriptures instruct for us to carry each other's burdens. But in order for us to begin exploring what that may look like, one of the things we said was that we first need to be aware of what those needs are, of what those pains are, of what those burdens are. And so last week, hundreds of you stepped forward and wrote all across these walls concerns and burdens and pain that you've been carrying around. And it was an incredibly moving experience to be a part of. Even more moving was to see hundreds more of you throughout the week come into this room and pray. And if you were a part of that, you know how powerful and emotional it was. All around the room, you know, three deep at some point of people praying and linking arms in this beautiful, mystical way with brothers and sisters all around us who are hurting just like each one of us are. And as people prayed, they simply circled the concern written down. And behind me, as you can see here, just every concern and every burden, it's been amazing to just see it circled dozens and dozens of times. Signifying of people praying. And myself and other leaders are continuing to pray over these the next few weeks. But we knew that many of you weren't here last week with the 4th of July holiday. And we knew many of you that we've talked to may wanted to write something but just didn't and weren't sure how all that was going to work out. And so we wanted to create more room because we ran out of space last week. And so on the walls, you'll see fresh paper that's kind of all around the room. And I would just encourage you after the service or anytime this week or next week that you would just take some time and you grab, there's markers attached to the walls there and you can just take one and write whatever it is that you want to write about a pain or a suffering that's affected you deeply and personally. And it's anonymous. You don't need to write your name. You can if you want to, but it's just simply for us to become aware of everything that's going on in our community. And as we begin to explore, what's that look like to carry each other's burdens and to care for one another. Now, all of that brings us to this morning, and so there's kind of a lot to dive into, so we're just going to go after it. So if you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to the book of 2 Kings. 2 Kings is in the Old Testament. Kind of you opened up your Bible, it's probably about in the first fourth. It's kind of hard to find. 2 Kings chapter 25. If you don't have a Bible, I'll put the words on the screen behind me, and you can follow along that way. But what I want to do is I want to camp out in some of the historical context for a passage that we're going to look at later on in Psalms. And so in order to do that, we have to first start here in 2 Kings 25 to kind of get the understanding of what's going on. So 2 Kings chapter 25, verse 1. So in the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign. Now we'll stop there for a moment and explain who Zedekiah is. Zedekiah is the king of Judah at this time, which is right around 589 BC. So 589 BCE, whichever one. The people of Israel are basically divided up into two kingdoms. So let me back up real quick. Somebody asked me after first service. They were like, so BC, BCE, and people get confused about that. BCE is before Common Era. BC is before Christ. But most scholars would agree, we would agree that Christ was probably born somewhere around 4 to 6 BC in that time frame. And so it's more from a historical accuracy standpoint that I would typically say BCE, not because I'm taking Christ out of the mix. And so it's just that Christ, most historical evidence would point to that Jesus wasn't born at zero. And so he was born right around 4 BC or 6 BC. So before Common Era is just a more accurate way of stating the time frame what we're talking about. So just kind of set that record straight. So around 589 BCE, the people of Israel, they're divided up into two kingdoms, a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. And Judah is the southernmost kingdom, and that's what Zedekiah is king over. So it says, in the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign, on the 10th day of the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Now, Babylon was an enemy nation to the Israelites. They marched against Jerusalem, which is the holy city of Israel, with the whole army. It says, he encamped outside the city and built siege works all around it. Now, this was a strategy of armies back in the day where they would surround a city completely, and they would basically wait it out. And so they would wait for one of two things to happen. Either the city and the people in it would give up and surrender, or they would just die, because they would cut them off from any outside contact, any food, any supplies, any of those types of things. So, verse 2, it says, "The city was kept under this siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. And by the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine in the city had become so severe that there was no food for the people to eat." So, now if you do the math, that's about 2 years that the people in Jerusalem have been cut off from any type of supplies. There's no more food coming in. Another author writes about this same famine in the book of Lamentations. Listen to how he describes the severity of the same famine that's going on in Lamentations chapter 4. He says, "Because of thirst, the infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth. The children beg for bread, but no one gives it to them." Verse 10, it says, "With their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children, who became their food when my people were destroyed." So obviously, when it comes to famine, understand, this is as bad as it gets. Now look back at the next verse there in 2 Kings 25, verse 4. It says, "Then," which is right around 587 BCE, "the city wall was broken through, and the whole army fled at night through the gate between the two walls near the king's garden, though the Babylonians were surrounding the city. They fled the Araba." Now, if you hadn't figured out already, this should tell you how bad it was, especially if you're an Israelite at the moment. Because the army of Jerusalem, the men that have been trained to protect you and to defend you and to defend the city of Jerusalem, the opposing army of Babylon comes in and crashes through the wall, and the Jerusalem army's like, "Yeah, we're out of here," you know? So they take off. They break through a wall themselves and start running. And so that's got to be comforting, you know, if you're a Jew and you're in Israel and, you know, you're all of a sudden the enemy comes in and the people that are supposed to defend you, that are supposed to protect you, that are supposed to say, you know, "I'll die to protect you," they run away. And so they start running away in the middle of the night. This is what happens in verse 5. "But the Babylonian army pursued the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho. All his soldiers were separated from him and scattered, and he was captured. Zedekiah, he was taken to the king of Babylon at Riblah, where sentence was pronounced on him, and they killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. Then they put out his eyes, bound him with bronze shackles, and took him to Babylon." So, the suffering here obviously just keeps getting worse. Jump down to verse 11. "Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guard, carried into exile the people who remained in the city, along with the rest of the populace and those who had gone over to the king of Babylon. But the commander left behind some of the poorest people of the land to work the vineyards and the fields." So the poorest of the poor, the peasants, they get left behind to work in the fields so that they can now work as slave labor for the king of Babylon, and they can produce food on the land of Israel for the kingdom of Babylon. But those Israelites, especially the young men that were deemed as potentially more productive and kind of the, you know, upper echelon, they were taken captive and brought back to Babylon in the hopes that over time they would become loyal to this new nation. And so as part of the brainwashing process, not only were these young men taken from their home, not only were they taken from their family, but they were often castrated and then they were given new names. Some of you may be familiar with the book of Daniel, and this is what's going on at the beginning of the book of Daniel, where some of the names may be familiar if you've grown up in or around church or the Bible. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These four young men that ended up being thrown into a fiery furnace because they refused to bow down and worship Nebuchadnezzar, this same king of Babylon, as God. And so, kind of with all of that background, of kind of this is what's going on at this particular time in history involving the people of Israel, I want us to flip over and kind of land in the book of Psalms. So Psalm chapter 137. Rob Bell's a pastor up in Michigan. Some of you are familiar with that, seen some of his Pneuma videos. He used a metaphor from this passage in a message probably about 4 years ago, I remember hearing it. And it's just stuck with me ever since. And I've been brought back to this passage several times since then. And so I thought I'd try to unpack this metaphor for you and walk us through some of the implications of that. Psalm chapter 37, verse 1. It says, "By the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion." Now, this particular psalm is written by these very Israelites that have been ripped from their homeland, ripped from their families. They've endured famine. They've experienced terrible suffering. And they've been taken captive and held there in Babylon. And they write this. They say, "There in Babylon, we sit and weep is we remember Zion. Now, Zion in the scriptures, and the Israelites would use it as another name to describe Jerusalem. So they're looking back on this city that was sieged and destroyed and torn apart. So we sit and weep as we remember Zion. Now, in that moment, as they're sitting there in a foreign land, in Babylon, writing these words, one can only imagine the thoughts that they had to be going through their mind. I mean, perhaps after everything that they were going through, I'm sure it was very normal to think thoughts like, you know what, if God was good, why would he allow this to happen to us? I mean, if God loved us, why would he allow our king to be humiliated? Why would he allow his eyes to be gouged out, his sons to be killed? If God was really there, why wouldn't he stop this? If God really existed, if he really loved us. Look at what they write there in verse 2. It says, "There on the poplars we hung our harps. For there our captors asked us for songs. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. They said, 'Sing us one of the songs of Zion.' How can we sing the songs of the Lord while in a foreign land?" And so it says, they hung their harps. Essentially saying, you know what? We're not going to sing praises anymore. We're not gonna praise God anymore. Too much has happened. So maybe you know exactly what that feels like. Perhaps you were abused. You were betrayed. You were molested. You were diagnosed. You lost your job. You were shamed. Battled the effects of an addiction. He died. Perhaps she left. Perhaps they filed. And because of whatever suffering has come into your life, perhaps you. But inside, you know that there's something in you that's in some ways hung your harp. And so with the rest of the time that I have, I want to offer you just a couple reasons why I think at some point during certain seasons of life, all of us are going to be tempted to hang our harps. And one is that simply whenever we experience great pain or loss or suffering, many of us are going to wrestle through thoughts like, you know what, there's no way that God could care about me. There's no way that God can be loving and not stop this from happening. You know, if God was really good, then he wouldn't let this happen to me. If God was really good, then he wouldn't let this happen to us. But you see, one of the things that we have to become aware about ourselves, because self-awareness is huge. I talk about self-awareness with leaders all the time. That self-awareness is absolutely essential in any type of relationship, whether it's with a spouse, whether it's with your kids or family or friends or coworkers or whoever it is. Self-awareness is huge in any type of relationship, especially with God. We have to recognize the reality that many times we do a poor job interpreting our own experiences in the moment. We do a poor job because it's hard for us to see past the emotions of the moment in the midst of suffering. And that especially applies to our interpretation of whether God loves us in a particular moment or season of our lives. It's kind of a way of an illustration. A couple years ago, we rushed our oldest son, Caden, to the hospital after he split his head open, and it was very apparent that he needed stitches. And I remember just how clear it was and how heart-wrenching it was to see these doctors wrap him up in a blanket so that his arms would be tied against him. And to see this one doctor hold him down and another one stand over him and stick this needle in his head, and having to listen to my son yell and scream for daddy to make it stop. Now, if you had asked him at that very moment, "Caden, does your daddy love you?" He very likely would have said no. You know? If daddy loved me, you know, there's no way he's going to let this strange man hold me down. There's no way he's going to let this guy stick this needle in me. I mean, no, dad doesn't love me right now. Now, he couldn't see that then. I mean, in that moment, his emotions couldn't let him process that you know, that I really did love him. It was because I cared about him. It was because I loved him that I was willing to let him go through that. But now he could. Now all of us can, because we have time and we have perspective. I mean, all of us have experiences like that. I mean, all of us get that, you know? I'm sure that you had scenarios in your life where you've gone through something where at the time it felt like the worst possible outcome. It felt like the worst possible scenario. It felt like the very opposite of what you wanted to have happen, happened. But then you look back 6 months later, or 2 years later, 5 years later, and you look back and say, you know what? That was the best thing that could ever happen to me. So glad that that happened. At the moment, it seemed terrible. At the moment, it seemed like the worst possible thing. But man, I'm really thankful now that that happened. Now, what that doesn't mean is that, you know what, when we look at suffering and we look at pain, then everything just kind of resolves if we just simply had perspective. Because we talked about this last week, and we're going to get into this more next week with evil and spiritual warfare and all that, that I think God grieves over suffering at times just as much as we do. I think God does, and so I don't think that just having perspective resolves at all. But when we do encounter it, and when we do see it, and in those moments where it's helpful, we realize it's the very reason why community is so critical. It's one of the reasons that we push getting connected to a life group so much around here, is because when painful seasons come, and they always come, for all of us, they always come, that we need people around us that we trust that will remind us of God's character, that will remind us that God is good, that will remind us that God does love us, that will remind us that God's desire is to lead us into life. We need people around us that reminds us that God is present and that God grieves with us, even if he doesn't cause it, even if it's not what he wanted, but that he grieves with us. We need people around us to remind us of God's faithfulness in our lives and not let us to forget in the midst of the pain and suffering all the things that we found ourselves thanking God for in the past. That we need people around us that will help us to remember and to see that it's not just about now, and forget everything and all the amazing blessings that have happened up into our life at that point and the hope that we have in the future. But understand what that doesn't mean is that what we're supposed to do is just put on this shiny, happy Christian face, you know, and just pretend like everything is just dandy. You know, and I think lots of Christians, they feel like we're supposed to suffer that way, that if you follow Jesus and suffering happens, then you're just supposed to pretend like, well, it just doesn't hurt and it doesn't bother me because I have hope for a future. And obviously this is just what's supposed to happen. And so we end up with this inauthentic relationship with God because we're trying to pretend all the time and put on this front for everyone else in the church and for God and just pretend like, you know what, yeah, it's okay. And then inside we're living with this torture and this torment of how we really feel. And that's why I love Psalm 13 that we read earlier this morning, where David, this who the scriptures call a man after God's own heart. And so obviously the scriptures have a lot of admiration for David, and that God thought a lot about David. And yet we see David just letting God have it. How long, David says in Psalm 13, how long am I going to have to go through this? God, are you going to forget me forever? God, how long are you going to hide your face from me? God, how long are you just going to let people trample all over me? How long, God? But he ends on this at the end of Psalm 13. He says, God, even though I'm frustrated, even though I'm angry, even though I'm mad at you, God, I will trust ultimately that you are good. And God, I will trust that you love me. And at the end of the day, whether, as we talked about last week, God caused suffering to happen, or whether he allowed it to happen, or whether the suffering that we're experiencing is the consequence of someone's evil free will choice, or whether it's the result of a spiritual enemy, or the consequence of simply living in a broken world, regardless of the why, what we have to find ourselves coming back to and resting in is God's character. We have to trust in that. And the evidence that we have over thousands of years that God is not apathetic about suffering, but rather that he passionately wants to do something about it. Now, another reason at times that we're all going to be tempted to check out in some way when suffering comes is that as we begin to think over time that when pain comes and we've experienced great loss, that we have nothing left to offer. You see, the great temptation in the midst of pain is to focus only on what's been taken away from us. That's where we start to go, you know, I just look at what's been taken away from me, and we begin to dwell on everything that we're not. Everything that we're now not as a result of what's been taken away. And what can happen over time is we tend to live our life only as the victim. And we begin to let everything else in our life pass through this victim mentality. And so rather than step into community, we step out. Rather than engage, we isolate ourselves and think that we have nothing to offer other people and nothing to offer the world. All we're focused on is what's been taken away from us. And one of the things that became extremely obvious as I prayed over the hurts that were written down over these walls this last week is that for many of you, you've gone through horrific pain and tragedy in your life. And the very fact that you're sitting in this room, the very fact that you'd have the courage to get up and write on a wall shows that you have persevered. You may not be completely on the other side of it, you might be in the midst of it, but you got out of bed this morning and you're here. And you're here. And that each of us, in the midst of our pain and in the midst of our suffering, have the unique opportunity to do exactly that, to persevere. And you need to understand that when you do that, it's not what's been taken away from you. You are given something incredible when you choose to persevere. And what you are given is a voice. You are giving a voice with authority that our community, the people that God has brought together here, we need. We need your voice. Because you see, I am well aware that while at times and many times I will address illness and pain and addiction with people on a regular basis, with individuals and couples and families, there's a limit to how far that I can relate and speak to it. Because there's a limit on my own suffering and what I've endured and experienced. But when you're willing to persevere, when you refuse to dwell on what you're not, when you refuse to dwell and just soak on what's been taken from you, but rather you choose to step into who you are now as a result. When you choose to persevere and share your story. Maybe you share that story to one or two close friends. Maybe you share that story with your life group. Maybe you share it in a letter or an email or in person to one of our pastors where you simply say, you know what, here's my story. I'm not going to try to pretend like I have it all together. I'm not going to put on the front for everyone. I'm not going to try to have it all together with my kids or with my family or just kind of put on the shiny, happy Christian face and just try to make everyone pretend, you know, I'll pretend myself that I have it all together. Here's my story. And if you ever think it can help someone else, then I'm willing. I'm willing. Because when you do that, understand that you make something essential possible. We'll close with this. Romans chapter 5. I want us to look at what's possible. Paul, a follower of Jesus, who endured incredible suffering, he writes, "Not only so, but we also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance." Now, I want to pause there for a moment before we get to the end because isn't it interesting that perseverance is something we all want? I mean, we all want our character to be marked by perseverance. We all want to be known as people that aren't going to give up when things get tough. We all want our kids to have the spirit of perseverance when difficult times come. We all want them to be marked by perseverance. So isn't it ironic that so many of us spend so much of our time and energy trying to shield ourselves from pain, trying to shield ourselves and shield our kids from any type of pain, from any type of discomfort, from any type of suffering in their lives. And we live our lives as if safety was the highest moral value. And yet we want them to have character. We want them to have a spirit of perseverance. And we have to look at our lives. We have to look at the way that we live our lives and what we step into and what we don't step into, what we try to shield ourselves from. When we say, man, we want character, we want to not just be a culture and a people that just kind of gives up when things get hard. Let's continue verse 4. It says, suffering, we know suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. Hope. Paul, again, no stranger to suffering. He says that ultimately suffering leads to hope. That when you persevere through suffering, it leads to hope. And hope is something that we all need. But there's another layer to this that I'm not sure that you might have considered before. That perhaps when you choose to persevere through suffering, it's not only about you. But rather, when you persevere, that it's us who actually get the hope. It's the people around you who see you persevere that get the hope. That somehow by seeing your life and hearing your story say, you know what, if they didn't quit, if they didn't give up, neither will I. You know, if they can get up in the morning and get out of bed, then I can get up. You know, if they can keep living, then I can keep living. If they can take down their harps and keep going, so can I. And so with that in mind, I'd like you to hear the story of a couple in our church, in our community, Frank and Heather Green. And so I invite you to turn your attention to the video screen so that you can hear their story.
I remember very little. I remember up to that point that we had exercised and just a normal night. You know, me and Heather going to get a quick bite to eat. And I think we were a couple of miles away from the house and stopped at a red light and started proceeding. And then, then our whole world changed.
It was the loudest bang, the loudest noise I have ever heard in my life. And all of a sudden, we're rolling. It's dark, it's light, it's dark, it's light. And we are rolling in our car, glass is flying in, the roof caves in, I can't see Frank. I remember putting my hands on the roof and going limp. I had seen that on TV like a night before on some 2020 show. It feels like we're going to never stop. I remember looking over to my left for Frank and the roof had caved in on him. And I crawled out through the window and tried to walk around and fell to the ground, and my foot was crushed. So I remember clawing over to his side, and I remember thinking, where is everybody? Certainly somebody saw this. And I remember when I did claw around, I was dizzy and, you know, just out of it. So I started screaming for Frank. And when I got to his side of the car, I looked up, and he is just laying there limp, blood, covered in blood. I knew he was dead. There was no doubt in my mind. And I knew I couldn't help him, so I was clawing up the hill and screaming, just somebody help us, somebody please help us. And it seemed like forever. Nobody came. And I remember laying on this, whatever it was from the road, little embankment, and feeling around, feeling my neck. And I got to my head and had a handful of head. I mean, I had a grapefruit-sized hematoma, and from what they had told me. So I thought I was next. I thought it's just a matter of time. I've fractured my skull, you know, I'm just going to bleed out. So I laid my head back, and I remember thinking, okay, how do I die? Just unbelievable injuries that they said if I would have been driving, there's absolutely no way I would have lived.
The things that I remember from that night are really vague here and there. The next thing I remember, from what I understand being told, you know, after the fact, is roughly 2 or 3 days later in the hospital on a breathing machine. I didn't know I was on a breathing machine, and all from my vantage point, I couldn't see, and I didn't understand why I couldn't breathe. You know, I was constantly fighting the breathing machine, trying to breathe, and then finally that air would fill your lungs, and you're thinking, oh, wow. But then you're scared to death to exhale because your next breath is going to be that much harder to take in. So we got out, and I had broken my neck in multiple places and fractured my orbital bone, ended up with a plastic disc behind my right eye, about 8 metal plates in my right cheek where they had to reconstruct that. You know, that night, so many good things happened. There was a plastic surgeon on call that night. So I had every surgery that I needed, you know, hours of hand surgery where they, you know, screwed the external fixator in and got the bones reset where they needed to be. And the plastic surgeon that put these 8 plates in my face to rebuild what my face is supposed to look like, and restitched everything, and then from there it was go home and heal, and that's not a fast process by any stretch of the imagination, but
I remember looking at you though and asking God what we did to deserve this. I mean, but then after the first few times of doing that, I would think it's so easy to be mad. It is so, that's just too easy.
I'd have those moments where, I just, oh gosh, woe is me. I can't believe this has happened to me. This is terrible. But what I really remember the most is the first day that I could hold the toothpaste cap with my left hand.
Or put your deodorant on my shirt.
The first time I put my own shirt on. You know, they had made Velcro straps to Velcro a shirt onto me so they wouldn't have to pull it over my head. And, the first day I could, brush my teeth by myself, and there's just little bitty triumphs where you take advantage. You take for granted that you can, you have two hands and two arms, and then suddenly you just have one. And I can remember having that thought of, God, man, my hand hardly works. It feels like a lump on the end of my arm, that I barely have any control over. And I can remember, just getting mad about that. And one point when I was really just inside, beating myself up, like, God, this really stinks. I saw this little girl who had a hook for a hand. She must have been 9 years old. I thought to myself, golly, here I am worried and all worked up because my hand doesn't work quite right. But I can feel with my fingers, and I can wiggle my fingers, and my strength is getting stronger every day. And, those times just, just motivated me. I didn't want to sit around and just mope about it. Mm-hmm. So,
I believe the devil's going to try to beat you down at every corner. But you just have to, when you're feeling down, you're feeling depressed, and you're feeling hopeless, I mean, you literally just hang on. You hang on to that little thread, even if that's all you got, and you climb back up it.
The way that you move forward and you keep going is that you've got to realize that Jesus loves His children. And, you surround yourselves with a good church family.
That was definitely, I was going to say.
We had such a great support group. We had a church family. I had a work family. I had so many good people at work.
But those people loved on us the way Jesus would have them love on us. And we saw that embodiment, and that helped get us through. I mean, it was Jesus, through these people. Yeah.
God's there for you. He loves His children. He wants good things for us. And you just have to keep the faith. Even though you can't see it, you can't see that. You can't see that God's doing things in your life, that he's alive and active and moving things out of your way.
I think we definitely learned that you can be grateful or hateful.
Yeah.
Because there were times where, why us? How could this possibly happen? What have we done that is so wrong?
Yeah, you hear about people. You see it on the news, or you hear some horrible thing that happens to somebody, but you think, man, not me, not anybody in my family, not anybody I really know, is that going to happen? And then there you have it. It happens. There's always somebody worse off than you, and you should be grateful that you are you and you're where you are.
I'm so thankful for Frank and Heather and their willingness to share their story with us. I was talking with them earlier this morning, and it was the first time that they've shared in any type of public setting, what they've gone through and their experience. And so, but there's something that when we hear their story, and you can see Frank, take down his guitar and sing, and to be able to sing that song, there's something in that that gives us hope. Whatever it is that we're going through, that, you know what? Yeah, they can keep going. I can keep going. And if they can keep praising, somehow I can find it within me. And so what I want to do to kind of close out our time together is I just want to pray for those of us that in some way, small or big, that have hung our harps. You know, in some way we've kind of checked out. In some way we've kind of withdrawn or taken a step back with God and just saying, you know what, after what I've gone through, after what I'm in the midst of right now, you know what, yeah, I'm just kind of hung my heart. You know, behind me all these concerns and sufferings and pains and burdens. In the light of all of those, it's very easy to recognize that there is a lot of hurt and pain in all of us. And it gets very easy to put on the shiny, happy Christian face when we walk in here on a Sunday morning. But this is reality. This is the reality of what we carry around and what you see on the walls around us. And as we'll continue to add, that's the reality that we live with. And it's very easy and understandable at times and in seasons to say, you know what, yeah, I just kind of hung my harp. So whatever that looks like for you, maybe you've gone through the motions, but inside, you know, you've hung your harp. You've kind of backed off from trusting God. There's something in you that says, you know what, yeah, if when it comes to praising God, you kind of just stick your hands in your pockets and say, you know what, yeah, I just can't. Maybe for you, it doesn't have anything to do with singing. Maybe for you, it just has to do with certain areas of your life that you refuse to surrender over to God, parts of your heart that you refuse to trust God with, certain parts of your life and the way that you live to say, you know what? Yeah, I'm just going to do it my way because, God, I'm not going to trust you with that. Maybe for you, it's just that you've simply stopped moving forward. You stopped asking questions. You stopped pursuing. You stopped running after God. And you just said, you know what? I'll just kind of stay right where I'm at, but I'm not going any farther. You just kind of hung your heart. Maybe for you, you come here because you're like, you know what? Yeah, it's good for the kids. It's good for the family. So I show up and I'm here and I'll go through the motions and I'll kind of play the game. But after what happened to me and what I saw and what I experienced and what I went through 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you know what? It's much easier for me to just kind of hang my heart. So I'll just put my hands in my pockets and I've just stopped. Trusting, I've stopped praising, whatever that looks like. For those of us, and in this room, we're all going to go through seasons like that. And I know that for many of us right now in this moment, that's where you're at. I just want to pray for us. And then after I pray, we'll be dismissed. So let me pray. Father, again, as evidenced on these walls, and will continue to be evidenced on these walls in the weeks to come, God, we come in here with a lot of heavy stuff that we carry around, some memories that we've carried with us for years and years, some memories that are so fresh because they're happening just right now. We can feel the physical pain right now at this moment, and God, we know that in some way we've taken this step back, that we've withdrawn from other people and we've withdrawn from you. We've hung our harp and just said, you know what? Yeah, there's no way I can keep pursuing or running after God. And so, Father, I pray that you would give all of us the courage to let your love break through that. Father, to let your compassion and your grace and your presence break through that. And Father, I pray that you would reveal yourself in us as a community as we surround one another and we journey through one another with one another through these pains, that we learn what it looks like to carry each other's burdens. And God, that as that happens, you would give us hope. You would give us hope. And you would reinstill in us a hope that you are in fact there, that you do love us,
that you do care for us, that you are good, and that, Father, that you grieve right along with us when we hurt and when we suffer. And so, Father, may our pain and our suffering not draw us farther away from you. But, Father, may you use it in a way that only you can to draw us closer to yourself. So, God, as we do that, may we learn to love each other well and to be your hands and feet in each other's lives. And we pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. So, thank you, guys. We'll see you next Sunday.